Welcome to Hope Chapel. You're about to listen to Andrew Cole.
We're going to follow on from last week. It's sort of like a follow-on. Because there's occasions in our lives when, like last week we spoke on storms. And we spoke about Jesus being in the storm with us. And we looked at the reality of storms, Jesus' presence in our storm, and the transfer from fear to faith. There are occasions in our lives that we can actually lose everything, or seemingly a storm can wreck us. You can be, what we're going to talk to this morning about is shipwrecked. It's when the storm seems to have won. I'm actually really nervous about bringing this subject this morning. Partly it means a lot to me, and also because I know firsthand how this is so important to move on from, that it's not a death sentence. I know many people that have been shipwrecked in their lives. I have only just met our new friend, and he will tell the story as well, our new friend Michael Parker, who will be speaking here, which is the Elizabeth Church pastor. He is going to be speaking. He's speaking to Elizabeth this morning, but he'll be speaking here next week. He won't be speaking on this subject, I don't think, but he is one of my new friends that had lost everything along his journey as well. And he was talking to me about the rebuilding process and what he went through and how good God was and how gracious he was in the rebuilding of his life. And it is quite outstanding. And I see the same sort of patterns and phases, I guess that's what I probably label them as phases that you go through. And I think that we can learn lessons from the word, which is the best lessons to learn, yeah? That we can glean from the word, but then we can also have our own journeys, or as some like to get rid of the word journey and use the word adventure, which I quite like, which is it. Our adventure of life and how God helps us along that way, or that we perhaps don't recognise sometimes, but in hindsight we can look at some of these things and see how there are patterns or there are phases that you go through. So you, as I said last week, we were just talking about storms, and you may have been sitting there saying, what if a storm wrecks you? Well, I heard that question. Even though no one said it to me, I asked myself that question at the end of last week. What happens when that storm wrecks you? So what do I mean by shipwrecked? A shipwreck in the Bible didn't mean death. Everyone say death. It didn't mean death. It actually didn't mean judgment and death. It actually meant loss and suffering. Has anyone had any loss or suffering in your lives? You don't have to show your hands on that one, because it's not always a thing you want to whack your hand up for. But there are many that know the feeling of loss and or suffering. So I want to look at a story, which I'm sure you've already picked, that the story of the Apostle Paul's shipwreck. It's an incredible story that we, or some perhaps, can relate to, and how it resonates with our own adventures through life's storms and shipwrecks. See, after Paul was arrested in Acts, I'm not going to read the whole two chapters about his shipwreck, so I'll allow you to read them yourselves. It's in Acts 27 and 28. But after Paul was arrested in Acts, and after various trials, he was going to be sent to Rome to appear before Caesar. So in Acts 27 and 28, we see Paul face one of his most perilous moments of his ministry. Yet his response to the shipwreck reveals valuable lessons or insights in survival, resilience, faith, and rebuilding with God's guidance. So I want today that we, for us to be able to learn from Paul's experiences, where we can find ourselves feeling shipwrecked in our own lives. So from my own experience, I'm lacing a little bit this with this as well, when we seem to go through these phases. So the first phase, when I see that story about Paul going, just let me grab a minute. This is so good fun. So the first phase that I had seen throughout my own experience and what I see through when I read Paul's shipwrecked experience was that you go through a survival phase. You've got to hang on for dear life. You've got to do everything you can to survive. Because if you give up straight away, there's no chance. You just leave yourselves open to everything that is around you, every wave that is pounding down on you, every word that gets spoken to you. You know what I love? I'm going to get passionate about this. You know what I love about when you're going through a shipwreck moment in your life, the words that come from people's mouths to you, that cut you down, that want to kick you when you're down. It is just downright disgusting. It is horrendous. If you want to know talk from the enemy, that's talk from the enemy, because John 10:10 tells us that the enemy wants to come and steal, kill, and destroy. And he loves nothing more than when a Christian is in shipwreck conditions, when they're trying to survive, there is nothing more that he'd like to come and just cut you off at your knees to make sure you can't take one step. And he doesn't want you to lift your head. He doesn't want you to look to the word. He doesn't want to look to you to the promises. He wants you to look no further than down. And that's the reality. I was dealing with something this week and I had to say to the parents who had a wonderful young family, and I said, don't you realise in all this mess that we're talking about that there's an enemy that wants to take this family out? And I said, we don't want to hear these coarse words, because we're Christians, we want to sanitise everything and nothing more, but we want to sanitise the cross. The cross is not a place to be sanitised. You don't want a sanitised cross. Because that'll leave things open which can't be redeemed. You want the cross as it was. Don't sanitize it just because we don't want certain words to come from our mouths, because now we're good and we're Christian. But there's an enemy that hates your insides. See, I was careful. I sanitized that bit. That he hates you. He hates everything about you. He hates the way you look. He hates the way you stand. He hates that you are 59 years married. He hates that you've got good voices. He hates that you've got wonderful children. He hates your walk. He hates your reading. He hates what you search for in the Word of God. He hates every single thing about you. He wants to steal it. He wants to kill it. And he wants to destroy it. So that's what we face. But we serve a God much greater than that. We serve a God that wants to give us life, and life to its fullest, to its fullest. We don't know, I don't believe, what a full life in Christ really is like, because we still allow these distractions, these enemies' words and curses to come against us. But this phase of survival is the most crucial one. We can't camp there, but it's survival. Paul's initial survival came... it was in Acts 27:42-44, not without difficulty. So in those verses, we see that the ship's crew was prepared to kill the prisoners, because that's what he was, to prevent their escape. But the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life. He ordered that those who could swim jump overboard first, and the others follow on planks or broken pieces of ship. Can you dim the lights? Can you do something there so I can see that? Or not? Or a blackout, one or the other. So we looked at that ship last week where it came alive and it had the squalls and it had the waves pounding on it. This is one further from that. That's the ship out the back perhaps. But this ship here is absolutely marooned. It's on a sandbar. Look at the people. That guy's throwing up over here. These guys are screaming out. This one's hanging on the crow's nest. These ones are trying to play, I don't know what they're playing on there. Not Firefox, what's that thing? Rope thing called? Flying Fox. Similar to Firefox. Tug of war? Who said tug of war? With what? The ship? And there is extreme despair and fear. And this is in pure survival. They're trying their best to get to safe land. And they had nothing in their mind other than trying to get off that ship and get onto dry land. And some did. And look at them there. They were just hanging on for dear life. That is what being shipwrecked could look like. That is what our lives can look like sometimes when we go through such incredible pain. And sometimes these shipwrecks come out of nowhere. It's like a wave all of a sudden appears, a rogue wave they call it, and it swamps the boat. And it can come out of nowhere. A squall can come up out of nowhere. I've been fishing with Cosmo and Theo when we go out with Sun, and next minute there's lightning and thunder and waves twice the height as the boat, and they're screaming like I've never heard girls scream louder than those. I was as calm as anything. I said, look, let's just motor on. The storm will pass. They're hanging on. They're underneath, cowering underneath the deck. Why I left to be on the helm of the boat, just steering it through this storm, knowing that my God was with us, and they were weeping. And their teeth were gnashing. It was so clear. And I've never seen anything like it. So, you know, that's just a bit of insight into where they were at their time in their faith. They have gone a lot better than where they are now. I guess I'll buy lunch. but when you're out there, it just comes out of nowhere. And so in our lives, you might think everything's going fine. All of a sudden, this rogue wave hits you. There's something out of the blue. There's something all of a sudden comes and starts to tear down everything in your life where you are on the brink of losing everything. And you know, the great story is that God, you know, is with you and you sail off and everything's fine. But this does happen. This does happen. I wish it didn't, but it does happen, either by your own mistakes or someone else's, by your own decisions or by someone else's. There is a culmination of things that take place and you can find yourself shipwrecked. And it's this survival moment that we have to dig deep, that Paul here is in survival mode, that he has to make sure that he gets everyone onto safe ground and be in that survival. He wasn't thinking about the future right there and then. He was actually thinking about surviving this ship. And I tell you, I know what that's like. You're not thinking that you have an actual future. You're thinking, how do I make it to the next sunrise? How do I make it so that there is light, some light, because all I see right now is darkness. Some people have explained it that is going through a shipwreck. It's like the dark night of the soul. And I get it. I genuinely get it. If you've been shipwrecked, you know what I'm talking about. There's a moment where at night, where it can seem like night or it can be physically night, that you go through this torment and this despair that you think, man, can this sun just rise? Because it's the torment of the dark night of the soul and you're in survival mode. All you want to get to is the next morning. And I might be sounding dramatic, but I guess if you've been through it, you know what I'm talking about. And if you ever face this, may God not allow you to, but if you happen to go through this, you've got to go to phase one survival mode, survive. Do everything that's within you to survive. So imagine being on that sinking ship. It's chaotic and fear that takes hold of our lives. Paul, however, stood firm in his faith. So when life storms threaten to engulf us, we often feel like that we are floundering. But just as Paul was spared, we should recognize that God's hand is still at work, even when our situation seems dire. See, Paul's survival amidst chaos is a powerful metaphor for the unpredictability of life. Who knows that life can be unpredictable? Consider how, despite facing life-threatening circumstances, Paul remained calm and composed. It reflects his deep faith and reliance on God's promise. See, in Acts 27, 23 to 24, it says, an angel reassured him that he would stand trial before Caesar and that God had granted him granted safety to all those sailing with him. He had one word. You know, when we go through our shipwreck moment, our survival moment, you know, you can't think so much of long-term future, but you can think of one word, one promise, that he is with you and not against you. Whatever promises, that's why it's important to consume the word, to meditate on the word, to allow the word to permeate you your whole life, because you don't know when that word is going to come alive in you. You don't know when the promises of God are going to become so real to you that that's what you hang on to. Those ropes that they're hanging on to, just think of those, of the promise of God that you know is on your life. Just one word. One word. You don't have to recite the whole word, every story in it, but it's the one word that'll come alive for you when you're in your survival phase. I knew my one word came through somebody, but came from out of the word, that this too shall pass. One word, one word, one word. And that's all you need. And you still go through this, the fear and the despair, but it's one word that you still hang on to. And I guess if you're in a place of survival, a phase of survival right now, cling on to one word. What is the one word? Think about it. Go to God. Ask him, what's the one word? Highlight that word for me. He is a faithful and a just and a true God. He will highlight one word for you. And that's what you hang on to. Just hang on to that. In moments of despair, remember that survival is often just the first step. God has a purpose for you beyond the wreckage. In 2 Corinthians 1:4, it says, he comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble. Surviving the storm is a testament of God's goodness. See, do I think that every wreckage will take people out? I think it has the potential. Being shipwrecked has the potential to become about death, but it's not God's way. You may suffer loss. You may have suffering. You may have things that you're thinking, man, I didn't sign up for this. But it's our choice how we go through that. I still believe that. It was my choice. And I can say that with some confidence, that I'm not teaching heresy here this morning, is that it was still our choice. It's still my choice. You still have a choice in the shipwreck, when you're being shipwrecked. How are you going to go through this? Are you wanting to survive? You've heard great feats of survival of people that have been lost for weeks and months and put up with crazy things in the wild. And yet they've got this resilience in them to say, I am going to survive this. Dig deep. You've got a God on your side. Dig deep in your faith. Sow a deep draw from the depths of your faith. You've got God on your side. You can survive this. But allow yourself to understand that you may not be in the same place as everyone else right now. You're in survival mode, and that is okay. Survival mode means survive it. Survive this time. survive this bad time. Don't think you're alone in it, because there are many that will go through it. Don't be embarrassed by it. Just go through it. Do everything. Dig deep in your reservoirs of your faith in God that you can survive this no matter what. A survival tip for you. After surviving a difficult period, engage in self-reflection. I tell you what I do for me. If there's a drama, not only in my life or within the church, the first thing I will do is self-reflect. We had some stuff this week. I had lots of driving to do. The first thing I did every single time was self-reflect. What did I do? How did I help it or hurt the situation? What is it I can, when I went through this, what happened? What was God saying? It's a self-reflection. It's okay to self-reflect. It's okay to look at your life, not from a down sense, but what has God done in your life? What is he doing in your life? How can it be helped in your life? So write down moments where despite the world around you, your adversity, you felt God's presence guiding you. Write those things down, because they are really, really important. Use these moments of reflection to encourage yourself and remind others of God's faithfulness. When people want to come and cut you down, yes, you might be in some mess, but remind them of God's faithfulness. And that will silence lips around you. What do they say? Loose lips. It's true. Silence those lips by speak the faithfulness of God back to them. They will come and say, mate, what did you do there, mate? You got sin in your life, probably. But my God is faithful. My God is true. My God is just. He said he's for me, not against me. And I will trust with everything I have in my God to the last breath that I take. You know, and silence those words. Or they're cutting. Those words cut those ropes. Those words cut your ability for survival. People don't mean to do it, I hope. That's my joy and my love towards humanity. But they say silly things. And if we allow those silly things to take root in our lives, all they do is just, they just drag you more and more underneath the water that you can't take a breath anymore. So find out what God's doing in your life. Speak of God's faithfulness when words that want to drag you down come your way. The survival instinct isn't just physical, but it's deeply spiritual. Acknowledge the sovereign strength keeping you afloat. Acknowledge him. Don't be fooled to say you can self-survive in this. Make the decision, but your reliance, put it all upon God and his word and his promises, all of it, and keep fighting. The second phase I call is the rebuilding phase. It's building, my point is building your crew after the storm found in Acts 28:1-2. Upon reaching land, Paul didn't linger in isolation. There's a word there, in isolation. This is your killer for your rebuilding phase if you isolate, because the enemy's ploy here is to isolate. The last thing you feel like doing is being in community, being amongst your peers, being amongst people, because there's all sorts of things attached to it. Some will be embarrassment. Some will make you feel weak. Sometimes you'll just feel less than. But that's all just the schemes and the wiles of the enemy. There's a rebuilding phase, and we need your crew. You need the crew around you to help with the rebuilding phase. Get out of isolation. If you feel like isolating, do exactly the opposite. Oh, no, I just need some time on my own. It'll be wrapped up in any great thing that'll make you feel like you're more holier than thou. But only you know. You can say whatever words we like, But it's you know in your heart of hearts what you're doing. If you say that, no, God's just dealing with me and I just need some self, just some alone time, that's okay if that's true. But if deep down you know all I want to do is run, that's not good. And it will hinder your rebuilding phase in this shipwrecked time. So Acts 28, 1 to 2 tells us that he was welcomed by the islanders who showed him unusual kindness, even starting a fire for the survivors. So it's gone. The ship, when they come out of that, how do they look cold? It probably looks like they're going to be freezing. I don't think they're dressed for snorkeling or scuba diving. They're dressed in their finest, and what would they need? They need something. They need to be kept warm. And I like how they use that. They started a fire for them. Once safe, Paul recognized the importance of having your crew or your people. It's crucial that we surround ourselves with others during our rebuilding phase. A picture coming out of a storm, cold and wet, and finding a warm fire waiting for you. How would you feel, other than cold going to hot? But how would you feel? You'd feel this warmth straight away. You think, that is exactly what I needed. So have your crew, your people around you, because they know what you need. They know exactly what you need at this time. And they will start to fan back into what was dull and almost gone out, back into a flame in your life. Take away the fire and use it metaphorically for us inside. So your crew fan what you were back into a flame. They fan the gifts and the talents within you, the call of God back in you, and they notice that and they know that, and they say, we got you, man, we got you. We got you. Come on, we've got you. We can do this. I can't take it away, but I can certainly fan back what was now really dull back into something which is raging again, which is going to warm you up, which is going to change the way you feel right now, because you need me. You need me. You need your crew. You need your people. Don't rebuild on your own. Don't try and be a lone ranger. We're called to do this together. You need people. You need good people. You need trusted people. You need people around you the whole time. The act of being welcomed and cared for by islanders is a testament to the power of kindness and humanity. Paul's willingness to accept help highlights the vulnerability necessary to heal and rebuild. I'm not talking about hundreds of people. I'm talking about the ones and twos. My biggest help, I have very, very clear helpers that I had around me. Ones that I knew. See, these islanders were strangers. I had some seemingly strangers around me. But there was a connection that they became a part of the saving grace of my life. That they mean they're no longer in my life, not regularly. But at that time, they were there. They were holding me. They were speaking to me. They were keeping me warm. They were feeding me. They were clearing the salt out of my eyes so I could see again. They were clearing the seaweed out of my ears so I could hear again. They were allowing the numbness out of my hands so I could feel again. They were showing me a way which was true and was just. They weren't trying to take me onto some place or force me to go to a place that I couldn't go to. They knew exactly how to help and when to help and what to say. They just knew the words and what I needed. I went back to them some years later and I said, did you really mean that when you said that? He said, no. I said, really? He goes, you were so far over there. I had to drag you. I had to say things over this side so somehow you were going to land balanced again. And I loved him for that. He took a gamble and a risk on me. He said, man, you are with the fairies. You need to come back and have an authentic faith. And I'm going to show you. He almost showed me a works-based faith. And I just was not in the place not to believe. So I started believing that until I started questioning some things. I said, do you really mean that? No. It's in here. But he showed me the balanced view. He showed me a place he just knew. He was my people for that moment, for my rebuilding phase. He was a part of my rebuilding phase. And you will have people in your life that will help you rebuild. They will. Some will be more extreme. Some will just straddle up alongside you as you are in the rebuilding process and you just need them. But those early ones, they're extreme. You need some extreme measures to take place. You need fire. You need warmth. You need words of affirmation. You need to be almost not overpowered, but you're going to say, man, we got you. We're going to take control of this. You just sit here and get warm by the fire. Don't worry about anything else that you've been called to. Just sit there and get warm because we're going to rebuild. We're going to allow you to be rebuilt again. And that's what I needed. I needed this phase in my life. As we rebuild our lives, don't isolate ourselves. Invite others into your journey. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 to 10 says this, two are better than one because they have good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. Two are better than one. We are called together. Two are better than one because if you fall, it's so much better knowing that you've got someone right alongside you to help you up. And I see it time and time and time and again in teams, in individuals, in church life. It's just one falls, and if they don't have anyone to pick them up, they isolate and they get lost. But if they got their crew, they got their people, they're there to pick them up. You can't become codependent. You've got to do it all in balance. You know what I'm saying when I say this. You've got to carry for a while. You've got to lift up for a while until you can walk, until you can, you know, go on your own two feet again. It's just an incredible story. And think about even when local tragedies happen, the involvement after fires or floods. People come together offering support, shelter and resources. They set up camps. They set up safe places, I'm not what I'm talking about, feeding stations, places where you can camp, and you've just lost your house and they'll give you a bunk and a blanket. It's better than nothing. It's better than nothing at all. And there's a crew of people, strangers around you, but they know the basic necessities. And then your people come in and then take you from there. You watch it time again, especially in this country, from droughts to floods to fires. You know, like the convoy of hay that gets taken out into these drought-ridden areas, like it's all free. It's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars and time and effort to get hay out to livestock and to farmers. And that's what they need. You think a bale of hay? Who cares? But when that's your life source, I tell you what, you care. You care when you hear a truck rumbling down the road with a hay bale on there. For your needs, for your what you need right there to rebuild, come on. It might be the smallest thing, and it might not mean anything to anybody else. What a haystack means to one person, a smile and a cup of coffee could mean totally different for someone else. So you just don't know how we're helping one another. Paul's situation reminds us that we don't have to navigate life's tumultuous, I'm not even going to try and say that again, wave. So I try and be fancy. I look up words. I think I would normally say this, I'm going to get a fancy word. And then I put this fancy word and I can't pronounce it. Tumultuous. Waves alone. We need the communal lifeboat. Don't disregard it. Evaluate your current relationships. Are you surrounding yourselves with uplifting people? Are you open to receiving help when you're struggling? Consider how you can actively build community by reaching out to those who may also be feeling isolated or struggling. The last phase is this, is testimony phase. Everyone say testimony. We'll finish and we'll be real quick. It's ministering through our trials, Acts 28, verse 7 to 8, and the guys can come up. Finally, Paul didn't waste his experience. He took the opportunity to minister to the islanders. In Acts 28, 7 to 10, he healed the father of Publius. Wow. And as a result, others came to him asking and seeking him for healing. After enduring immense hardship, Paul didn't wallow in self-pity. He didn't wallow in self-pity. Instead, he took action to help others. The miracles he was used to perform on the island led many to believe and understand the power of God. Paul's willingness to serve as a messenger of hope, even in his difficult times, can illustrate to us the essence of true faith at work. If we wallow in our own mess, you don't rebuild, you can't have a testimony of what God has been doing in your life because you're too busy wallowing in your own stink. People allow it for a little while, but then no one wants to hear it. Trust me. People don't want to hear about your shipwreck all the time. Our trials can be our testimony. James 1 to 2 to 4 encourages, count it all joy, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Your trials become a way to glorify God and serve others. If we shift our focus from what you've lost to how you can help others rebuild along with you, is life-changing. Inspiring accounts of those who, after facing addiction, illness, loss, turn their stories into ministries that uplift others. If you want to know stories like that, Google them. Find them, read them, consume them. You know what? Maybe ask around, because there's plenty around here. Individuals often become beacons of hope, effectively sharing the darkest moments followed by redemption. Their lives serve as a testament of God's grace and ability to resurrect the broken. Our whole faith is built on this. Our whole faith in Jesus is built on this redemption of the broken. It's what our lives are about. The redemption of the broken. Broken people helping broken people. We're not sitting in that because we're giving it all glory to God. How can we become a part, or how they can become a part of your testimony? They can journal, you can again journal your experiences where your struggles led to understanding, your growth or your empathy towards others. Share insights, be it through a testimony. Envision yourself as a vessel of healing, much like Paul was on the island. See, Paul's story reminds us that after the storm, we can emerge not merely as survivors, but as agents of change. Through enduring faith, embracing your people, and allowing our experiences to minister to others, we can rebuild our lives with God's unwavering support. When we face shipwrecks in life, let's take Paul's example to heart. Survive, rebuild, and reach out to others, knowing that God is with us every single step of the way. Can we recognize that God doesn't let our experience, both triumphs and trials, go to waste? The shipwreck isn't just a moment of despair. It's also a place of sovereign intervention and purpose. When rebuilding after a wreck, remember that God's plans often blossom through the ashes of the past. I don't know that I'd be standing here if it wasn't for a shipwreck. I don't know that I could share the passion of this word, the belief of this word, if it wasn't from going through it. Not just a storm, but a shipwreck. Ultimately, in our shipwrecks, we find the fingerprints of God guiding us to new shores. Let us pray for open hearts to rebuild, reaching hands to uplift and to help others in the process. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. I didn't want to just go through a storm when others I know had been sitting here shipwrecked. There's so much to our lives. It's so many intricacies and so many phases and adventures that we go through. And it's not about rebuilding. It's not all about finance. It's about, see, part of my rebuilding for my own life was the rebuilding of my faith. It's looking at every single thing that I believed in before for 25 years. It's then looking at that and saying, God, help me through your word. What is it that I believe? Some stayed the same, some got altered. Some I come to my senses. And I had questions for years and never would take the time to try and find the answers, because you're in an environment where that answers weren't required. But when you're in a shipwreck, you need answers. You need answers to your questions. Can I encourage you to start digging deeper into his word? So when troubled times come, whether it be a storm, whether it be a shipwreck, that you can draw deep from your faith. You can hang on to a promise that's come alive. That you can hang on to a promise that no man or no woman can talk you out of. Say, oh no, that wasn't for you. You need to do this. No, it's my God's word. And that's what I'm going to hang on to. It's the promise that God gave me through his word that I'm going to hang on to. And is it arrogance or self-righteous? No, it's determination. It's determination and it's drawing from the deep wells of faith. Some of you draw from them and you've never really realized. Most of my wells were dug when I was 18. Most of my wells were dug in my bedroom at 18 because I used to like sitting at home on a Saturday night. I was such a fun guy. And just read the word, because there was so much I didn't know. There was so much that kept coming alive. And I still draw from those wells today. And I keep filling them up now, because every time there's something that goes wrong, every time a storm or something goes wrong, I have to find something else and say, God, what, how? Tell me. And you fill up more buckets. So you don't need empty buckets in a storm. You don't need empty buckets in a shipwreck, which is opposite to the natural. You want empty buckets to get rid of the water. I need full buckets filled with faith. I need full buckets that I can draw from, that I can hang on to, because that's where my salvation and redemption and rebuilding and testimony comes from. That's how I survive a shipwreck. Shipwreck doesn't mean death. There'll be loss and suffering, but there's survival, rebuilding, and God's testimony. at the end of it. May God bless you. And I trust that you can have something from today, that you can grab hold of something of today and apply it to your lives or put it in your buckets for the future. But God wants to give you life and life to its fullest. Let's stand to our feet and thank you for coming out, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the message this week.